This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Michigan State University Religious Studies Professor Muhammad Khalil joins us to answer one of the questions we received from you about Islam. But first, the state has a budget for 2017-18, but there are always plenty of other issues for lawmakers to tackle, either during the few session days that they will have this summer or perhaps in the fall. State Representative John Hoadley is a Democrat. He represents the 60th District, which includes the city of Kalamazoo. John Hoadley, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So the budget was, of course, crafted by a Republican-led legislature, signed into law by the Republican Governor Rick Snyder. So Democrats might have only had a marginal influence on the final product. But let's start with this. What do you think the state budget does get right?
So there's a few parts of the budget that I think are doing pretty well. I was really excited to work on the agriculture budget. I'm on the Appropriations Committee, so I was very hands-on with the budget in most departments. Actually, my committee chair on ag, Roger Victory, Representative Victory, did a fantastic job. And, you know, we had some really big wins in there. Everything from some more money that's going to be able to support things like urban agriculture in the state, to more money for help with some of our key events and expositions. So, you know, the county fairs and folks that are applying for those pieces, to, you know, making sure that we're doubling down on investing our commodities and testing so we're keeping our food safe. There's a lot of really good things in the ag budget itself. But unfortunately, those are sort of overshadowed by a couple of big misses, right? So we had a few swings and misses in both the general budget and the school aid budget. On the general budget, this budget still continues to cut services for our most needy citizens. And, you know, the thing that I hear the most about, things like fixing our roads and potholes, don't see a significant fix in this budget. And when it comes to the school budget, although there is more money flowing into classrooms, and there's going to be more money for at-risk students, so the ones that need extra support to catch up in reading and math and some critical skills, that made it easy for me to vote no, because there's some very punitive language in there that are targeting places like Kalamazoo Public Schools that are standing up for the constitutional right of our students in court. And it would say that if you if a school district engages in legal action against the state, that they'll lose 5% funding per student.
On the subject of cutting services, does the state need more money? And if the state needs more money, do you have to generate revenue from somewhere?
Yes, the state needs more money.
How should they get it?
Right. So I actually hosted a budget boot camp town hall back in April that explains the budget process. And I'll tell you, it's complicated. And it's complicated for some good reasons. A lot of ways that we get our revenue in the state is by tying fees to direct services. So when you buy your hunting tags, it's helping support conservation efforts to keep our hunting stock healthy and alive. So there's a lot of things that then people say, well, why can't you just take money from pot A and put it into pot B? And we'll say, because we passed laws that you asked us to pass that then said the money I'm spending on my hunting tags should support hunting activities. And these continues in many different sort of ways across the state. But the reality is that over time, the general size, the amount of money that we're spending at the state government has been reduced or has grown less than the rate of inflation for years.
So if you had to pick, and I realize that no individual state lawmaker gets to pick, but if you had to pick where the state was going to go and generate more revenue, where would it be?
The first thing we have to go is to what's called the tax expenditures. So we actually keep a list in the state government of all the tax breaks that we're currently giving industries. You know, there's a lot of them, some that make a lot of sense. For example, the earned income tax credit, that's a tax expenditure. And what it does is
that actually goes to individual families.
It does, right?
Corporations.
And it also says, well, there's a good there that's saying if people are working hard, playing by the rules, but their jobs don't pay at a level that can actually support a family above poverty, we give them a little bit of a rebate. This helps businesses keep wages more affordable for them and helps families provide for their kids. But there's other tax expenditures all over the tax code, some that we exempt specific industries. There are some that give sort of these legacy credits for things like stranded wells and things that used to be pumping oil. We give big tax breaks for those. So we should be going through that list and saying, you know, we can't afford to be given away the farm if you want us to actually then have enough money to make sure that there are roads to the farm and there's clean drinking water on the farm. So that's where we have to, I think, look first. And then the second thing we need to do is have a top-to-bottom overhaul on the way that we do taxes in the state. You know, when Governor Snyder and the Republicans took over in 2010, so when they started in 2011, one of the things that they did is drastically overhaul the way that we do business taxes in the state. And there's some good there because there were some messed up tax structures before. But I don't know if we've got the number right yet. When you look at our net business income, so the amount of money that we're either getting from business taxes versus paying out in business credits, and it's basically negative or flat most months of the year. So people are making money in our state, and they're not paying taxes.
You have proposed legislation that would expand the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act to include protections for LGBT people. Not the first time you've introduced this, and you're certainly not the first lawmaker who has suggested that this is what the state should do. What are some things that you have heard about on the ground that are happening to people in Michigan that makes this expansion necessary?
Well, let's start by saying that lawmakers have been proposing this inclusion for about as many years as I've been alive. And I'm 33, I'll be 34 in August. So it's been a long conversation. The thing that we hear on the ground is that a number of folks who have talents and skills to contribute feel that they're not sure that they are going to be welcomed or that they can be who they are and protect their families in some of our developing communities across Michigan. And that's unfortunate for everybody because we want talented folks who want to raise their family. They want to live in quality communities. And that shouldn't just have to be in our urban centers, you know, whether that's Detroit or Ann Arbor or increasingly Kalamazoo, which has a very tolerant reputation now. The things that we're hearing about are people who are being harassed at their jobs, they're being fired. We saw the state took concrete action last term where they said it was now legal to discriminate against families in adoption and foster care. So an agency can explicitly say, we don't serve people like you. And if we believe in a marketplace where folks can compete, then everybody should have the same shot at that competition, the same shot at opportunity, and shouldn't be excluded at the gate.
I think I probably ask you this every time the expansion of the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act comes up, but it's still a relevant question, and I should ask it again. Is there any reason to believe that expanding those protections to LGBT people is going to get any serious traction in the current legislature made up of pretty big Republican majorities in the House and Senate?
So there's some things that I think are unique right now. The first is that discrimination against LGBT folks is a losing issue. We've seen this in poll after poll. So as we have a significant campaign that's beginning for 2018, where a vast majority of the senators will be up for re-election, the entirety of the House, as well as all of the constitutional offices in the state of Michigan, I think it's a point now where folks on both the left and the right can be injecting these conversations in primaries. And I would contend that if you don't think that LGBT folks should be treated fairly and equally in all aspects of our state government, then you are disqualified from being the person that governs our state, that enforces our laws for our state, or writes legislation for our state. And I think voters have the power right now to bring those conversations forward. And I will note, we should probably be having these conversations in primaries because of the impact that gerrymandering still has in our state. So primaries are the place that we need to be having them.
Okay, well, let's talk about gerrymandering because the U.S. Supreme Court is going to review Wisconsin's plan for how they draw maps for Congress as well as their state legislature. You have proposed what would be a nonpartisan redistricting commission here in Michigan. Could the Supreme Court case have any impact on what you're trying to do in this state?
Absolutely. So for folks that are less aware, the Supreme Court the case that's being heard regarding the Wisconsin maps is looking at the argument that partisan gerrymandering should be unconstitutional and it should be disallowed when drawing maps to represent communities. Ultimately, what's interesting about the Wisconsin map and case is that they found a formula that quantifies what's called the efficiency gap, essentially the wasted votes. So you're looking at you're providing an objective standard to what should be considered sort of fair play when you're drawing maps. But in terms of the work that we're doing here in Michigan, it could have a huge impact. What it would say then is the next time that we're drawing lines, which is coming up in 2020, right, or sooner if they were to force redistricting, that you can't look at expected partisan outcomes when you're drawing lines. What it would mean is ultimately we'd have fewer districts that are overwhelmingly Democratic or Republican. They have to be more reflective of the communities in that they serve.
Representative Aaron Miller, who's the chairman of the House Elections and Ethics Committee, represents the district just south of yours in St. Joseph County. He has questioned how nonpartisan you can truly make a commission, that everybody is going to come to that body with some beliefs and biases that are really hard to screen out. How would you do that if you're going to have a quote-unquote nonpartisan commission?
Well, let's start with saying I appreciate Chairman Miller, and it was great that he actually attended one of the town halls hosted by Voters Not Politicians and Count My Vote. But the argument that this, whatever was proposed, may not be perfect is blinded to the fact that what we have right now is absolutely partisan. It's literally drawn by the party in power, who then get to pick and choose where they want their lines to best serve their interests. So we can tell you what's working right now. It's not working. A nonpartisan redistricting commission like the one that I've proposed, that's actually built on the work that former Representative Sean McCann was doing, says that you essentially have to self-select into one of the pools, known Democrat, known Republican, or independent. You are excluded from those pools by some set of behaviors. So you can't say you're an independent if you are a former partisan lawmaker or you've made very large donations to a political party. That would suggest you're not quite so independent. And it uses a similar system to we use for jury selection. So it's called jury voir dire, and essentially allows the opposing political parties to strike folks from the pool. So if for somehow folks saw me in the Democratic pool and Republicans said, that John Hoadley, he's very Democratic, they could strike me from the pool. So, and then we could do the same for Democrats to Republicans. So it's sort of owning up to known partisan interests, right? And step one to fixing a problem is admitting that you have a problem. It also, though, provides an element of randomness. So there's a first pool that's selected with the Auditor General, and then it's moved on to from qualifying folks that are left into sort of a lottery also drawn, which make it really hard to game that system.
Realistically, if you're going to get such a proposal before voters, is there going to have to be a effort to collect petition signatures as opposed to getting enough votes in the State House and Senate to get it on the ballot?
Yeah, I wish that we could move it through the legislative process. And I wish Chairman Miller would bring it up for a vote or hear some competing structures, but he hasn't. So my hunch is we have to go to a ballot measure.
So speaking of things that voters may get to decide, the lieutenant governor is leading a petition drive to make the legislature part-time. Should the legislature be part-time in Michigan?
No.
Why not?
So first, I'm not surprised that, Lieutenant Governor Calley, who's been holding a public job for his whole life, is trying to run against another career politician, Bill Schuette, and trying to find some distance between the two of those, right?
Well, didn't Brian Calley work in banking before he got into the state legislature?
So you're right. Probably not as bad as Attorney General Schuette.
Well, but bad is all relative depending on how you view public service, but go ahead.
Fair enough. But I would say this, that they're trying to create some distance between the two of them. So they're having this conversation that they know isn't true about a part-time legislature. Michigan is already the state with the shortest, strictest term limits in the country. And now what we want to do is, or they're saying, is that we should also have very few days that we're in session. If you play this out, what it really means is that if you're a corporate lobbyist, you have to work fewer days a year, and you're going to have even more control. Because there's the time at which you'd be able to actually, legislators can push back and do the learning and research that's needed to pass good laws is even less. And then on top of that, what they would do is say they would strip all the ability to do any sort of government services. So essentially, the only place you'd be able to call and get help if something isn't going right in your world is the governor, which is all part of this power grab that Calley and other folks are proposing. They think if they're going to be governor, they'd get to be king then, because there'd be no check from the legislature. In other states that have part-time legislators, they have much longer term limits or only de facto term limits. So there are strong legislators who represent the people that can be a check. We would not have that in Michigan. So at the end of the day, I mean, this is one of those things where they love it for the headlines. They love it because it builds on people's frustration with government. But they've been the party in power for the last 6 years. And if they think that there's still problems with government and being able to get things done, that's on them.
Michigan, though, is one of 10 states, I believe it is, that has a full-time legislature. I mean, are the other states doing it wrong, or is Michigan different that it needs a full-time legislature?
So we're a $55 billion enterprise, that we are the 10th largest state in the country. We have one of the largest land masses in the country. We have a whole ton of pieces that oftentimes require full-time work. And, you know, if you look at our legislative schedule, the argument might be we're a little light in the summer. And a lot of us are back in districts doing work. But, you know, the truth is that on any one of our legislative weeks, we're tackling significant issues, even if we disagree with those issues. Now, you know, the part of the what happens with a part-time legislature in a state the size of Michigan is that when significant changes are going to happen, that they all get piled into the same day and the same weeks. So, you know, there are other states that do it differently, and that's fine. We should look at the outcomes of those states. But I would say that when it comes to Michigan, if you want to have a serious conversation about a part-time legislature, one which, by the way, legislators would still then need to go get second jobs from corporations that may hold them accountable or influence their votes, you know, we should probably have that a simultaneous conversation about term limit reform. And I know that Lieutenant Governor Kelly has rejected that. But it's, you know, you can't continue to break something and then complain when it's not working.
So one last question about the 2018 ballot. Will John Hoadley be on it? And if so, what will he be running for?
I will be on the ballot, I'm hoping. So I'm running for state representative for my third term. So I'm hoping that the voters of the 60th district send me back one more time so I can complete my 6 years of service in the state legislature.
So you do not plan to run for state senate in 2018?
I do not plan to run for state senate in 2018.
John Hoadley, thank you for your time. John Hoadley represents the city of Kalamazoo and parts of the city of Portage and Kalamazoo Township in the Michigan House.